Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to another edition of the Hang Time Podcast. I'm your host, Sacrum Smith, here in Atlanta. Happy New Year. Welcome to 2021. I guess we all survived that beast that was 2020 in one piece. Since we're starting a new year, we might as well come fresh, out the box, first podcast of the year, with my man Logan Murdoch of The Ringer, formerly of many other places of fame, but most importantly, this man was an intern at Turner Sports at one point. Probably didn't know what we had in our midst at the time. Now he's on doing bigger and better things, of course. Logan, what's up, brother? Happy New Year to you.
What's up, man? How you doing? Man, it's an honor to be on your show, bro, especially being a Turner intern. One of your producers, Sean, he was my intern classmate in 2016. So it was really dope to just, you know, things just come full circle, and it's dope to see it, man.
No doubt, man. It's called evolution. You just happen to be running a little faster on the treadmill than some others, man. Congratulations to you. Last night, I'm watching NBA TV, and, you know, like I will do at times, I will stand up. I get in the mode where I stand up when somebody's cooking. Like, I'm like, oh, man, like, this might be a stand-up game. Like, I might have to stand in front of my TV and watch it like this, you know. At halftime, Steph Curry had 31. And so in my mind, I'm thinking, yeah, he's getting ready to go, you know, go nuclear here. How wicked could this get? Portland Trailblazers probably felt the same way. When did you know last night that Steph was en route to a historic evening for himself? Even for a guy that's been in the league, you know, 11-plus season, now this is his 12th year. He got 62 last night, his highest scoring game ever. And this is from a guy that most people consider the greatest shooter in the history of the game.
When I first started seeing him that this was going to be different, it was in the first quarter when he was going to the rack. He was being much more aggressive. And for a superstar, Steph can be a little passive at times, and I think that you know, that could be good and bad, but this season they need him to be aggressive. And he was very aggressive from the onset of the game. I think I knew it was something different was in that third quarter. You know, when he got to 45, I was like, okay, he's on a mission right now. It's really surprising that Steph didn't have a 60-point game going into this one. But I knew he had something up his sleeve. I knew he was going to be more aggressive than normal in the first quarter, but probably in the third quarter, I was like, okay, Steph has something. A lot of people got him messed up right now.
I don't know what the backlash is. I know we've debated it, you know, just as a basketball public over the years, whether or not Steph is really as great as his back-to-back, you know, MVPs or his unanimous MVP, his championships, all that suggests. Far be it from me to go against the crowd, but I've never felt like there was any doubt about Steph's game-changing ability. Like, nobody has ever stretched the floor in the dimensions consistently that he does. I don't know if it's that Steph is an ordinary human being by most people's standards, doing extraordinary things that makes him so appealing. And then on the flip side, such an easy target for people's hate. Like, I don't know what that dynamic is. What is it that you've evaluated over the years? What do you think it is that makes Steph so polarizing in terms of either love him or you completely disagree with the idea that Steph is an all-time great superstar?
I think it's a myriad of things. I think one thing is jealousy. You know, he beat a lot of players that, you know, he might not have supposed to have beaten at the time that he beat him. He beat KD. He beat, you know, Dame Lillard, beat James Harden, beat LeBron James at a time when the league was supposed to be the Cavaliers led by LeBron and the Spurs led by Tim Duncan, he interrupted a lot of plans for a lot of people. And the way that he transformed the game, you know, a lot of people hadn't seen that before. And there's going to be a backlash to that. I think with Steph, there is a bit of an unfair comparison, at least what I've seen over the last week, of a comparison to him and LeBron James. And LeBron would have done really well with this roster. And, you know, you've seen what he did with the 07 Cavs and things like that. And I think that's a bit unfair to Steph, because Steph isn't LeBron James, but he is a really great player. He is a top 10 player, and he is a Hall of Fame level talent, a generational talent, someone that has changed the game. But his team isn't really good, and he's going to need 62 points or around that for them to compete on a night in, night out level. But he's a really great player and one of the defining players of his generation, no matter what anyone says.
You were around them when they were at their zenith, the Warriors. That atmosphere in Chase Center last night was funny. His teammates were running around the baseline and going crazy, but no crowd, no ambiance like we were used to when Steph had a great performance. Did it change the way you viewed it, knowing that there's no people in there, there's 40 people in the stands in the Chase Center?
Might have gave me more respect, because it's harder to recreate that energy when there's no fans in the crowd. It's a, pretty much a glorified pickup atmosphere at Chase Center when they play. And so it's kind of more impressive, the fact that he can, you know, recreate that energy and, you know, without a crowd, because, you know, over the years in Oracle and at Chase Center, when Steph goes off, you know, it's a different type of cheer. I always used to joke with people around me when at the Oracle days, when he would go off, there was a different type of yelling going on. It was a different type of vibe. The building was a bit different when Steph went off compared to even when Clay or Kevin went off. And, you know, Steph is one of those dudes. So it was weird to have that, but I think it have no fans. But I think it was more impressive, the fact that he was able to recreate that energy.
Yeah. What's the vibe around this Warriors team? I mean, last year, the injuries and everything took its toll. They were on the backside of that amazing run. Everybody kind of knew that it was going to be a struggle. Are people surprised at how uncompetitive they were early on this year in the first few games? Like, well, did that shock people, you know, that they're not more competitive than they thought they might be?
Well, I think there's a bit of a reckoning this season, right? Because of the injuries, you know, they thought they were going to have Klay Thompson this year, and they thought that they were going to be a power in the Western Conference. And they thought all these things, and rightfully so, but you know, it didn't work out that way. And I think that now that they're trying to figure out a life post these glory years where they have to reinvent themselves. I think one thing that the Spurs have on the Warriors and even the Bulls is that they were able to reinvent themselves over a long stretch of time. The Warriors may have had the largest peak or one of the largest peaks in NBA history, but they haven't been able to reinvent themselves. And this is the time to do so. And so far, it hasn't been able to work out when you talk about injuries. You talk about trades that, you know, they were trusting their infrastructure to, you know, revitalize careers in D'Angelo Russell and in Andrew Wiggins. And so far that hasn't happened so far. And I think that they're seeing a reckoning right now, and you know, we'll see what happens. But as of right now, Steph is going to have to ball out for them to be competitive.
Yeah, I do like Wiseman, by the way. I do like the young boy.
Wiseman is cold, man. Wiseman is cold.
Got so much potential. You know, I know we've buried the big man about seven different times in the last 20 years, but you're 7 feet tall, you can run, you can jump, and you got great hand-eye coordination. I'm pretty sure there's a place for you in basketball. Just don't spec. Like, you will have a future in the game if you got those kind of measurables. Where is the league right now, do you think, in the aftermath of a Warriors dynasty that's come and gone? LeBron is the most durable superstar I can remember in any sport, in terms of from the time he stepped into the league to now, to still be at the tip top of his game is remarkable. But where's the depth of the game? KD was at one point kind of the next guy to grab that torch. An injury changes the trajectory of his ascension, I would say, in terms of being that number one guy. Like, who's the heir apparent, do you think, for the perch that LeBron holds in the league?
I think it's to be determined, man. You got Luka, you know, you got Trae Young, you got Zion, you got a lot of names that could take that torch. It's TBD. And I don't think LeBron's ready to let it go right now, but I think that the league is in a healthy place. You know, after the Warriors dynasty, you got a team from outside the country win a championship in the Raptors, and you got the Lakers back on top. I think the league is in a healthy place, but as far as someone taking LeBron's throne or him having to pass it right now, I don't see a clear cut person. You know, you can say Luka, but I don't see a clear cut person right now.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's Luka is kind of the leader of that young brigade of players. You know, you're talking about guys 25 and under in the league. It's just an embarrassment of riches by the standards of having guys that are going to become the next wave of superstars. You mentioned Trae Young and the Hawks went into this season with a clear motive of trying to move up and to become a factor. Early on, it looks good. It looked like a team that's going to be a playoff team in the East. Whether or not they get to the postseason and make noise is to be determined, but at least they look like the kind of team you say, all right, they got a superstar potentially in Trae, quality depth, and then young guys that are on the ascent. Do you feel like the Hawks are one of those teams that has a chance to really step into the void this season?
Yeah, I definitely do. I really like Trae Young's game. And I know one thing about Trae is he's really competitive. And I also know that he was not in the bubble. And that really messed with him. You can see that on socials. And I think he's really taking that on a lot of folks. And I think that was a season for a team to come out of nowhere. Not to say that the Hawks weren't brewing for a minute, but if there was any season for a team to go out of nowhere, it would be this season with the quick turnaround, with teams not really having an identity so far. Even one of the teams like the Nets, who they played and had a back-to-back set with, they have the same record as the Warriors right now, right? So I think that if there was any time for the Hawks to get on a stage like this, it's right now. And Trae Young's playing really great. Collins is playing really great. That dunk the other night on Allen was crazy. But I think that they're one of those teams that have always been one of those young teams that you should keep your eye on, especially with Trae on the roster. But I think now with the season and, you know, in the unprecedented times, I think that they could really make a mark right now.
You know, it's funny. Trae is the author of a lot of these nights that I call – it's what I call spontaneous brilliance in the NBA. It's one thing that, to me, makes sports in general, but the NBA especially, so appealing. You could be a fan of this game for 30 years, and it's like you can't prepare for the next night when a Steph Curry goes for 62 or somebody hits 9 threes or just something crazy. And I was thinking about it earlier today. It's like, is that what you think keeps the NBA fresh as much as new faces and new talent? It's just the fact that you never know what night a LeBron James is going to do something preposterous or somebody's going to do something that chases headlines. And I think that's a cultural thing, more than just basketball. Like, you wake up and somebody be talking about Steph getting 62 on Good Morning America. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you think keeps the game fresh in the minds of everybody, not just basketball lovers, but kind of the general public as well?
I think the spontaneity of the game has definitely suited the NBA in a way that it hasn't suited other sports, especially with the rise of social media, right? Because anytime someone is going off, you know, I can hit Sekou and be like, oh, yo, you better watch Steph right now. Or I can hit Sean Bartley and be like, oh, you better check out Steph right now. You can really do that in this climate. And it feels like we're all coming in as a community to root on Steph hitting 62, or coming in as a community and seeing, oh, look what LeBron did, or oh, look what Luka did. So the uncertainty and spontaneity of the game has been great for it, especially with the rise of social media. And the quick turnaround with that has been great for the game.
In the midst of Steph's just going nuclear, Logan, I saw you had a tweet. It went viral, went around the world. You talked about y'all slandering Steph Curry into a career-high performance. Do you think Steph internalizes some of that, even at this stage of his career, even after all he's done? He kind of absorbs that criticism sometimes and takes it out on the court?
Definitely. I mean, I think there's a lot to be made about players, you know, reading about themselves a lot and, you know, using that energy. But Steph is one of those guys. He reads everything. He reads every text. He reads every tweet. He reads every article. He knows what's being said about him. And I don't think that that's talked about enough, but he internalizes a lot of that stuff. And he's one of the most competitive people that I've ever been around and that the team's ever been around. And so when that happens, Steph's looking. Like, Steph is seeing them tweets, or someone around him is seeing them tweets and showing it to him. So I wasn't surprised by his response to that slander. I wasn't surprising at all.
Yeah, he catches smoke, I know, for everything, like his hair, his beard.
I just want to be on the record, though, man. He deserved all that smoke for them braids, dog. Like, you know, he deserved every bit of smoke for them braids. Just and it's not a coincidence that he started balling out and started flourishing when he took them braids out. Just for the record.
Good point. He did let the hair breathe and went for 62. So
yeah, he just need a lineup now. He just need a lineup now. He's straight.
Hey, that's another whole podcast, by the way. We're going to revisit that one day in the future, just NBA haircuts. Why some have them and why some don't. I would love to get your opinion on that.
Yeah, yeah, it's good.
You got such a unique perspective on it, you know, being plugged into the game, then being plugged into the greater culture around basketball. What's the next curve that we're going around in terms of how this all connects? I know, you know, think about the last year and the rise of the social justice movement and kind of the impact it's had on young players. I think about Jaylen Brown, Kyrie, some of these younger NBA players who have been huge voices just in terms of using their platform, you know, to further other causes. Like, what's the next frontier, you think, for that intersection of athletes and kind of the empowerment movement? Where does it go from here? Because, you know, we don't hear Black Lives Matter at the end of interviews anymore. And we're not seeing those outward gestures about that. But it has to evolve, doesn't it, into something next?
Yeah, I think especially with this generation, you talk about the social justice movement. It's on everyone involved in the NBA. I don't even want to say it's on the players. It's on everyone involved in the NBA to make sure that that holds true and that they are speaking true to their words. It was kind of disappointing to see that the Black Lives Matter movement and the insignia wasn't on the court anymore. And, you know, you can make the argument, and I'm not saying that this is what the league did, but the optics seem like, well, you know, we got Black Lives Matter on the court just so we can get black bodies on the court. You know what I mean? Just for the summertime. And it's on everyone involved to make sure that the memories of Breonna Taylor and the memories of all these people that have been killed by police are still out there, and to keep that voice going. It's on everyone involved. And I think that with this generation, they show that they can do it. I think the biggest thing is just the next curve is just showing that they can sustain this movement, because they got a lot of eyes open, got a lot of people hearing their message. They're probably not going to get at least an outward help from the league in terms of having that logo on the thing, but it's on the league and it's on everyone involved to make sure that social justice movement, you know, stays alive.
Who's a team in your mind in the league this year that's poised for the most significant move into that upper echelon?
I think Phoenix Suns, man. Phoenix Suns are really good. I love their team with Devin Booker, and I love the fact that, like, Chris Paul can just go to a team and just make them into a playoff team and just kind of like get their locker room in order and just make sure the franchise is going, and then he gets traded away. Like, I don't know. I like that he's the guy that is just the elder statesman and that can just get the team over the top. Monty Williams has done a great job. You know, even in a loss the other night against the Clippers, they were a team that, you know, they still came back, fought. They're 5-2 on the season. I really love them. I really love watching them play. And I think that I don't know if the sky's the limit for them, but they're definitely going to be a team to be reckoned with going into postseason.
What's the storyline you're looking at in terms of at least through March that you got to keep an eye on to help you determine what's going to go on this season?
I mean, I think this is something we did in one of our Ringer staff articles, is the biggest storyline, I think, and probably the most underrated storyline, is COVID. You know, it's can they get to that point? The league has done a great job so far. With cases so far, but you know, it's a long haul, man, and we are at our peak right now. And you know, I know there's a vaccine out there, but you know, Adam Silver said he's not going to skip the line to get it. You know, the league isn't going to skip the line, so that means a lot of due diligence has to be done on a team level and a league level to make sure that the league gets to March and that players are healthy, because this is a really devastating virus that we're dealing with. And I think that's something that we need to keep an eye on, is how the league can continue to play with, you know, the threat of this virus, and if they can get to March. And that'll be something, you know, to keep an eye on. And that's something I've definitely been keeping an eye on since everyone got out of the bubble.
No doubt. No doubt. Logan Murdoch of The Ringer joining us here on the Hang Time Podcast. Keep informing, man. Keep educating us, man. Love your work. Obviously love the journey, man. We'll catch up with you again.
All right, man. Appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Yes, sir. We appreciate Logan Murdoch from The Ringer joining us here on the Hangtime Podcast. And as we do every Monday, we transition into NBA.com's power rankings with my main man, John Schumann. Shu, happy 2021. We made it. So that means you got to shave the beard off now. I mean, you made it to 2021. Got to get rid of the beard. get that clean face.
We're still dragging some of 2020 with us into 2021, aren't we?
I feel you. Power rankings this week. Los Angeles Lakers holding strong in that number one spot. I would imagine it's going to be very difficult for somebody to budge them out of that spot if they don't have a stretch where they just play horrible. I mean, they're the defending champs, and they got two of the best five players on their team in the league.
I don't know. I can get an itchy trigger finger every once in a while. I mean, they could certainly have been moved down this week. It's just the teams that were hanging around with them last week fell off, like Brooklyn, obviously. You know, Indiana, Orlando started hot, and they lost games. So you got to admit, like, if there was one team that could put it on cruise control this season, it was the Lakers, with the built-in excuse that they had the shortest offseason ever. But you got to give it to them. I mean, I give Frank Vogel a lot of credit. I mean, he got that team last year building, you know, defensive habits early on, and they seem to be doing the same thing again this year, you know, getting the new guys with the program and not skipping steps.
Interesting, the one team we always seem to talk about in L.A. gives way to that other team in L.A., man. What is the deal with the Clippers? I mean, they started out big win on opening night, got blown out, and we kind of turned our head, you know, and ignored them for a few days. Where are they in their evolution this season?
Well, there are three teams that are 5-2 at the top of the Western Conference. That's the Lakers, the Clippers, and the Phoenix Suns. And the Clippers beat the other two. You know, they beat the Lakers on opening night. They beat the Suns on Sunday, led by 31. Almost blew all of a 31-point lead. maybe just because that's the way the season is going. But finally sort of put them away in the final minute. One thing is, like, there's going to be people that say, yeah, Paul George, show us what you can do in the playoffs. But he's having a fantastic season so far. And obviously he was at the center of that blowout at the hands of the Mavs, because he celebrated Christmas on the 26th and you know, they were playing the Mavs on the 27th. And obviously that became an issue, I guess. But this dude is averaging 25 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists, shooting 51% from the field, 49% from three, and 93% from the free throw line. And his defense is terrific as well. Like, you know, he's one of the best two-way players in the league. And because of what happened in last year's playoffs and because of the, you know, day late Christmas celebration, we can sort of take him for granted. But you watch him, I mean, he's incredible. I mean, he's become an elite three-point shooter. He makes some really nice passes and some nice, like, pick and roll passes. His actual pass to Nicholas Batum for that dagger last Sunday night against the Suns was a really nice pass. It was a little like a cross court dart right into the shooting pocket.
Yeah.
And then defensively, that dude, I mean, I don't know if there's anybody in the league better at getting around screens, kind of guy that will sink from the weak side and help and then deflect the pass out to his man. Like, he's all over the place. And so when I watch him, I really appreciate how really freaking good he is. And try to, you know, obviously the playoffs are another story, but right now he's playing fantastically.
Yeah. I always have to remind myself how good a shooter he is. Like, there are guys who are good 3-point shooters, or guys who are good, you know, around the basket, whatever. But, like, he's a good shot maker from basically everywhere on the floor.
It's not just like catch and shoot stuff off of Kawhi Leonard. It's like he's shooting some. He's done. There was one wicked step back move he had in the first week of the season that was just ridiculous. He's shooting it at, you know, high difficulty shots too.
And let's be honest, he's got a lot to make up for. So good for him. You know, good to have the energy coming into this season to play at that level. I think it's going to be really interesting, Shu. I got the first kid MVP ladder is coming up this week. And it's going to be interesting how you slot players based on performance this season and not based on trajectory or where they're supposed to be or what the conventional line of thinking was going into the year. Because really, I'm not using that as a guide. I'm not using what the expectation was. I'm going to use what these first round of games say.
Yeah. Well, how do you take team success into it too this early? Like, Nikola Jokic is averaging a triple-double and shooting like 60%, but the Nuggets are 2-4, and mostly because they stink when he's off the floor. I kind of wrote this a little bit. It's like, you know, team success matters with awards, especially MVP. If the Nuggets, I mean, they're not going to have a losing record all year. He's not going to average a triple-double and 60% shooting all year either. But, like, if his team sort of lets him down, like when he's off the floor, like that could still affect the guy's chance of getting an MVP, because we think of MVPs as being, you know, top two or three teams in the conference.
Yeah. Paul George trending up. Who's the team or player you think is trending in the opposite direction of Paul Reed?
Well, how's it not the Brooklyn Nets after blowing out the Warriors and the Celtics on national TV in their first two games? They've lost 4 out of 5. They lost to Charlotte. They lost to Memphis after Memphis lost Ja Morant to an ankle injury. They lost to Washington on Sunday. They have defensive issues, rebounding issues especially. They've given up the most second chance points in the league by a healthy margin. Mm-hmm. They have second unit issues. We talked about this. I think, you know, actually they started staggering the minutes of Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, but not like 100%. So like they were still starting the second quarters with a full 5-man second unit, and that destroyed them against the Wizards on Sunday. They got crushed at the start of the second quarter. So, you know, Durant looks great offensively, and he's probably their best defender as well. But Kyrie Irving, not a good defender. DeAndre Jordan, great rebounder. He's the one guy that will, you know, get rebounds for them, but not a great sort of defender in space. So that's a problem. And so they got issues, and you can't overlook them losing Spencer Dinwiddie.
So who do you have on your, you know, on your list as the team to watch this week? First week of 2021, fresh start, theoretically. Who are you keeping an eye on?
I remain curious about the Celtics. They've played okay, but they just barely split a series with the two games with the Pistons this week in Detroit. Lost the first one, came back from a big deficit, and then missed some shots at the end. And then the second game, they needed a three from Jaylen Brown, first of all, and then they needed Jason Tatum's game winner to get a split with the Pistons, who may or may not be the worst team in the Eastern Conference. So they have serious depth issues. I mean, they basically, without Kemba Walker, have 5 or 6 guys who can play, and then, you know, everything falls apart when Tatum especially or Brown is off the floor. Jaylen Brown has been on fire. He's shooting like 78% from mid-range, which is ridiculous. But still, they're sort of just scraping by, and they've got some big games this week. They play at Toronto on Monday, which is actually at Tampa, and then at Miami on Wednesday, and then they have the Heat again at home on Sunday with a game against the Wizards in between. So they play 3 games against 2 teams that they faced in the playoffs last year, 2 against the Heat and 1 against the Raptors. So that should be, you know, good measuring stick games for all those teams, actually.
Good time, like I said, to keep an eye on Boston. Is what do you do, you know, like Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum? You know you have money players in those two guys, but to me, everything else around them, it becomes the question of Kemba's injury situation, you know, whether or not he's going to be healthy enough to give you his best at some point this season. We'll see. All that more, though. I mean, if you didn't feel like the season was back the first week when you had to blowout games, I felt like it over the weekend shoot. I felt, all right, now the season is really starting. Like, there's enough meat on the bone now to evaluate some teams, players, see where they fit. I'm interested to see how teams like the Hawks and the Suns progress from good early starts. The changing of the calendar has fired me up again now. I'm ready for the season to stretch out and get going. John Schumann from NBA.com joins us here on the Hang Time Podcast, as he does every Monday, talking power rankings. Appreciate you. Talk to you, brother, in the coming days. We want to definitely give a shout out to Logan Murdoch from The Ringer and John Schumann of NBA.com for joining us here on the Hang Time Podcast. We will be back later this week with more information, more opinions, and everything for you. We'll see you next time.